What are the Nephilim and what are the Bnei Elokim? So the Torah tells us in the end of Genesis, in the end of Parashas Bereishis, HaNephilim hayu v'aretz b'yamim ahim. There were these Nephilim in those days. And then asher yavou b'nei Elokim el b'not ha'adam v'yaledu lahim. And then the B'nei Elokim would be intimate with the sons of man, with the daughters of man, I'm sorry. The sons of Elokim, which we'll have to define in a minute, were intimate with the daughters of man, and they bore them these amazing warriors. Hema giburim asher mi'olam anshei Hashem. They were those amazing warriors that became men of fame. What are we talking about? So that's what he just asked. What are we talking about? So the simple reading of the verse is there were these Nephilim. There were these tremendous warriors who were around and they were basically bullying people around. And they weren't on the same level as others. You had the Bnei Elokim. You had those that were called like sons of gods, where they were like really huge sumo wrestlers. And the Nephilim, they were like fallen. They were of a lesser size. So you had two types of bullies. You had two types of gangsters. Call them perdition's angels and I don't know what's the other. Right, something like that. So you had two motorcycle gangs at the time. And they would be taking whatever women they wanted. And they'd be having children who were also as brave and as brutal as they. And that's a description of how society lost its moral fiber at that time. So that's a simple reading of the verse. The verse is describing different types of bullies, thugs, who were around in different groups. And one is called the Nephilim, to indicate they were of a lesser stature. And one is called Bnei Elokim, which means they were the sons of the powerful ones. It must have run in families. Right. So that's a simple reading of the verse.
Is this in any way related to Greek philosophy? Greek? Because it's just from the simple verse, it sounds like, you know, like the gods had like, you know, kids with like humans, and then they were like.
We didn't say anything about the gods having kids.
Well, I'm so confused with Bnei.
The word Elohim means powerful. Yes. They were sons of the potent ones. So They had tremendous potency, meaning ben could also mean having, right? Having, owning, having the properties of. Ben doesn't only mean son of. Ben also means having the properties of. When we say ben mitzvah, you say bar mitzvah, it's Aramaic, but that really means ben mitzvah. It means having the responsibility of doing the mitzvah. Bat mitzvah means she is having the responsibility of doing mitzvah. So the word ben doesn't have to mean son of. Bnei Elokim could mean those that have the great Elokim, the great force. So they had a lot of strength. They were bullying society around and taking advantage of their political clout, their physical prowess. At the end of the day, they were taking advantage of whatever strength they had. So that's a simple reading of the verse. You want more than that?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. You want more than that. So then we enter a new realm. We know that when we read the Torah, so we have levels of interpretation. We have Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod, right? Four levels of interpretation where we have to know how to understand the other levels of interpretation, right? What does that mean? What are our sages alluding to when they tell us this is a Medrash, this is a stories that revolve around what's going on in Tanakh? Do they mean it literally? So we've had many classes about that. So we'll take the stories literally, and then maybe we'll analyze them with depth. So the Medrash tells us that as man was sinning down below, the angels up above were scorning man. And the angels basically said to God, "I told you so." Because the Medrash says that when God wanted to create man, so the angels in heaven said, "Why create man? He's not going to live up to his responsibilities. he's always going to fall short. To which God said, begone with you. So then the next set of angels came in. And God said, what do you guys say? Should I create man? And they said, bad idea, bad idea. Man, he's going to have weaknesses. Man is going to fall. He can't live up to his potential. Nah, don't create man. He'll sin. He'll disappoint you. And God said, begone with you. And this happened time and again. Until finally, a group of angels came in and said, you want to create man, you have to first create the concept of tshuva. Man has to be given the capacity to repent. If you want to create man with all his weaknesses, so man is going to fall and you have to give him the ladder to climb back up. Part of being human is having downs. So you got to give him the potential to get back up, which is the concept of tshuva, the capacity to return, which is not a simple concept because ordinarily you did something wrong. It's done, finished. What do you want? And God comes along and says, I give you a chance to get back, and it's as though it never happened. When we're kids, we're accustomed to that. Because our parents will very often allow us to get away with that. As you grow older, you suddenly realize life doesn't do that for you. Person speeding down the highway, we had a student here, 6-7 years ago. He was studying. Interesting fellow. He was about to get married to a Catholic girl. And they got engaged. And the girl said, I'm not marrying you so fast. So he said, why not? She said, I know what it means to be a Catholic. You don't know what it means to be a Jew. I'm not marrying a person who doesn't know where he comes from. You go study a little bit about your roots and then we could get married. So his Catholic girlfriend said to him, you better know something before we get married. So he said to her, I know. Being Jewish means you love Israel. She said, open a prayer book and show me you know how to pray. He said, I don't know how to pray. So she said, then you go study and then we'll talk about marriage. So he came to Israel. In order to marry his Catholic girlfriend, he came to Mechon Meir. And the first thing he wanted to do, he spent 2 months, he said, you got to teach me how to read the prayer book. You know, I got to learn how to pray. It was only after the 2 months that he learned how to pray. He said, whew, now my Catholic girlfriend will take me back. You know, we didn't know what was behind all this. We were studying, we were good friends. And then he said, I need a break. I'm flying out to Jordan. So I said, bad idea. Don't go to Jordan. So he said, don't worry. No, I'm Jewish. I didn't know what he meant. He said, no, no, guess. Okay, fine. So what he meant was that there'll be nothing that'll identify him as Jewish. So he flies out to Jordan. He goes on vacation. And in the middle of his vacation, he's flying down a highway. Someone had a flat tire. And the kid walked out from behind the car in front of his car. He hit the kid and killed him. And was taken right away to prison. And in Jordan, they have all kinds of interesting laws. There's a very interesting law after a person hit a kid. Now, he wasn't to blame. The kid walked in front of his car. He's driving down the highway, and the kid walks in front of his car. But in Jordan, there are all kinds of blood laws. You know, if a person's kid was killed, so then the parents were able to say, we're not letting you out of jail until you pay X amount of money. And once they heard he was European, so you understand that that sum went very high. And he was supposed to go before court. Now, if the courts would have seen that he came into Jordan from Israel, he was a dead man, possibly literally. The consul from his country came to visit him in prison and took away his passports so that they wouldn't see that he came in from Israel. They really helped him. And We did a lot of things. And at the end of the day, we got him out of Jordan after about 2 months he spent in a Jordanian prison. So he got out. Yeah, he got out, and he got out relatively easy. He was warned that when he gets out of prison, he better not sleep in the country because it's very common that the parents of the kid who was killed in a car accident will come back and the person disappears. In other words, there's like this honor code where if their son was killed, the fact that it wasn't his fault was irrelevant. There's a code of honor, and and they're going to try to track him from the prison to the hotel room, and he might not walk out of the hotel alive. So they had the consul accompany him to the airport, and they whisked him out of Jordan. So at any rate, if a person goes flying down a highway, as you grow older, you realize there's no rewind. You can't undo what you did. As children, so our parents try to give us that ability because that way we learn. But in real life, it doesn't work that way. We pay for our mistakes. We pay for our decisions. And you can't undo something you did. You can try to rectify. You can try to make it better. You could try to build. But you can't undo. So God created a concept of tshuva, which is by no means natural. It's a phenomenal concept. The angels tell God, you want to create man, the only way you could do it is by allowing him a way back, a way to come back, even though he's done something wrong. So God creates tshuva and then creates man, and 9 generations later, all of humanity is corrupt. You barely have an honest soul here on planet Earth. Everyone's stealing one another's wives, one another's money, and so the angels come in heaven and they say to God, told you so. That's basically what's happening. The angels say, what'd you create man for? Look at what he's up to. So whenever we have such conversations in Medrash, we have to understand, what does the Medrash mean? Meaning, why do the angels feel a need to do it? And what does it mean that they do it? And what comes out of it? But at any rate, so here the Medrash says, God said to the angels, if you'd be on earth, you wouldn't be doing any better than man. You just don't have man's desires. That's why you look at him and you mock him. So the angels say, let us have a chance at it. We'll try. And, you know, when I was a kid, there was a t-shirt that said, God, let me prove to you that having $1 million won't spoil me. You know, so that's the angels say, we'll try. And that, the Medrash says, are the Nephilim. Those were angels that fell, so to speak, from heaven, that were allowed to have a chance at being human, and they didn't succeed. On the contrary, when they came down as humans, they were given a human body that was much bigger and much stronger, and they took advantage of it for the worse. They utilized it for the worse. And then, when they had children, their children were also unnaturally strong and huge. And that's the Bnei Elohim. Bnei Elohim. That, again, you had tyrants who were sourced in heavenly force. Now, this, by the way, should enlighten you a little bit. We discussed a few months ago that people like to say, this isn't a Jewish concept, this is only a Christian concept. And if you learn a lot, the more you learn, you'll see that there are many concepts that we have. Here the Medrash discusses an angel coming down in human form. No. Doesn't drive us crazy. We can live with that. I don't think the Medrash should be taken literally, but that's a different point. But the simple reading of the Medrash does say that. So that's the Medrash about Nephilim and Bnei Elohim. Yaakov isn't done yet.